Welcome to part two of our conversation with Aaron Bush here on The Grave Talks. Let's talk a little bit more about, you were talking earlier about when you were a child, your fascinations that would border on obsessions into different things in different places. And this is where I can relate a bit. I was that way with Titanic. And this is not a move from the movie that came out far later.
Way later.
This was, I mean, I was fascinated initially. Honestly, I think it was because I watched Robert Ballard on the National Geographic discover it. And so I was like, I was in way early. I was even.
We were too, because my dad is the same way. He is obsessive. I remember when that issue of National Geographic came out with Bob Ballard's pictures. We still have it at home.
I have it on my desk here in the office on one of the consoles.
So does my dad.
Yeah, because it's in it. I got it as a gift, and it's an original copy of it. And I remember, you know, paging through that as 1,000 times when I was a kid. I would get the books from the library and every which one I could find, and all, because that's what you had to do back then. And it was, you know, every single class project from, I think, first to about third or fourth grade, it was some depiction of the Titanic. And I could tell you, like, at the time, like, how many people died. And I knew, like, numbers, which is something I normally never know. But it was crazy. I mean, to a certain, I loved it. I was getting so much fulfillment out of it. I didn't in that time see just, wow, if the outside looking in, what that, you know, must look like with this kid that's like now it would be, oh, they have Asperger's or something, you know. which probably is the case. I don't know, I've never been diagnosed, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised. It was one of those things where I don't know what it was. I can't say I ever had a moment where I was identifying as an individual from the boat, or felt like I was somebody else, but I had a very deep connection to it. I remember one night, even, I mean, this is, it's so bizarre. I don't know if I've ever said this out loud, but it was probably second or third grade or something. And I had just read another story about it because I was reading everything I could. And I was thinking about all of the people that had died that night. And just this overwhelming feeling of sadness came over me. I remember crying about it. And like, this is not like a third grade boy. I wasn't like super emotional. But like that really, for some reason, I mean, it struck me more than just it was a fact from a history book. There's plenty of other shit in history I've read that's absolutely horrendous and sad and horrible, but nothing ever struck me so much that I actually, it overtook me emotionally that way. So tell me about that, your experiences with the obsessions, if you will, in your life.
I was the same way. I mean, I think Egypt started for me pretty early, kindergarten, first grade. And I think I remember writing a story in the third grade. I think my mom probably still has it somewhere. But like I could see inside pyramids, weirdly. So I was just writing like what I see. And so any same kind of thing, any book, any, you know, what can your little third grade heart get a hold of on TV in the early 80s, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or the late 80s.
Yeah.
But, you know, encyclopedias, library. I was an avid reader. But then it shifted suddenly to the Holocaust. And I couldn't even tell you where that started. Like, I couldn't tell you the singular event where it was like, okay, this is the new thing we're obsessed with. But I just remember clear as day, just reading books. And like my dad would actually let me watch some of those documentaries, you know, when Pat was there and you know, they were bringing in the townspeople. And my mom was like, why are you letting her do this? He goes, she's got an interest. There's something else here, you know? So he would let me watch that stuff. Now, who, like you said, from the outside looking in, who lets their third grader watch, you know, tractors shoveling bodies out of a pit?
Right.
But clearly there was something there for me. So I actually, in the eighth grade, got an opportunity to go up to DC and we did I was adamant. I wanted to go to the Holocaust Museum. It was still relatively new. And, you know, sort of 5 or 6 years of this obsession by this point. And I just remember walking through it. And we got to one specific spot and I had had my fill. I was done. And I remember we left and I sat, same effect that you just talked about. I sat on the curb and sobbed for an hour. I was inconsolable and the teachers didn't know what was happening. I couldn't even talk. And I didn't touch it again till high school, probably, or college. I think I really had had enough. It hit me hard like that. Have you been to the Holocaust Museum in DC?
I have. Yes.
Okay, so you know, and no, it's a long time ago, so I don't know if it's changed, but they had a section there where it was set up and they had different methods of suicide, I think is what it was. And so the TVs were set in these boxes face up, and in each one, they were certain height for certain age ranges, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I just remember seeing these two men had hung themselves and they were still hugging. And that was it. I had reached my limit. Mm-hmm. And it was too much at that point. And I look back on it and I'm like, well, is it past lives or is it more of a human need to figure out how did we end up there?
Yeah.
Like, how did we get there? You know, and all the everything going on with Ukraine right now, I can't watch it.
Yeah.
As a sensitive now, I can either watch the news or I can keep doing what I'm doing, which is to help other people heal.
You can be, yeah, exactly. You know? Can be a mess and absorb all of this horrendous things that are going on and not and be able to
spit it back
function.
Out to my clients as it's running through my body, right?
Yeah.
Here you go. Have some stress and depression and chaos and sadness for your session today. Yeah. You know?
No, I hear you. I can't do it either. I stopped doing news about a year or so ago because I'm just like, I would watch it all the time, but we do a true crime show and that's about the news I consume. And it usually ends up being really crazy things like people doing goats or something.
I was a criminal paralegal for 9 years, you can imagine some of the things that I can't unhear or unread.
What's so scary is like, you know, you can find humor in some of these absolutely horrible things that they're absolutely horrible things. That's the thing.
But you're still like, what the?
But it's still better than.
How did you? Yeah. What?
I know.
This is a thing. How is that a thing?
I know.
It's mind blowing.
And oftentimes that's the thing. Our minds will not process it to ever make sense of it because we're not thinking however way. Individuals who are doing crazy things are.
Yeah, you can't think rationally about a person or an act that is completely irrational. You just don't go together.
No.
Ever.
It's interesting where you're talking about, you know, is this a past life or is this you trying to figure it out? Another thing that I've always wondered about the idea of past lives or us just having extreme fascinations with things like that, especially as children. Is it something or could it be something that's attached to us that is using us to get the information that they want?
That's a great thought.
With Titanic, with me, it's like, you know, was there some sort of attachment there? It didn't mean me any harm.
But
it was just like, I'm interested in this. And somehow I know I can somehow have sort of influence on this child to drive this way. And then, I mean, because if I died there and then it's all these years later and you can discover, oh, I can live through this person a little bit. I'd do it, you know, you'd want to know what happened. You want to like read everything about it of if that's where you died. Is that something with those things where it's something that's attaching on that's going to use you as the vessel to kind of consume that information? And that kind of explains where some of these obsessions come from that we otherwise really would have no reason for obsessing on.
That's a really good thought. And I had never thought of it that way. And I think you're onto something there because, again, it still ties back to energy.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Catastrophic event kills 1500 people in the middle of the ocean, freezing.
Yeah.
I mean, how much energy was absorbed either by, you know, obviously the people that survived or the boats or the, you know, the things that they're bringing up from the bottom of the ocean, but how much of it was in the ether?
Yeah.
Most of it. Well, didn't have a whole lot to attach to once it went underwater. So I think that's absolutely a possibility.
Yeah.
And are they at that point, if that's the case and that energy is looking for specific people, are they looking for specific people who they know are going to run with that and learn as much as they can? Like, is it an intelligent thing that's attaching?
Like they can tell.
That's a really interesting thought.
Tell the, you know, it's like when the assumption that sometimes they can tell those who are sensitive enough. So they're going to go and approach those people rather than someone who's not, you know, it's an awareness maybe on the other side of, oh, okay, this would be a good person to hang out with and kind of guide this a little bit. I know it's interesting.
That's true.
Because too, I mean, I also, as you know, we get older, we grow up and all that. I mean, I still have an interest over there. It's something I do. But like the obsession's not there. I don't have the time or the, but it's still like, if I see something Titanic, I'll look at it or get it. It's been sitting in my safe forever. I have a floor tile from the Olympic
Do you really?
Yeah, I got it at an auction years ago, and it's just been in my safe. And I'm like, I really should display this. Like, it's kind of silly that it's sitting in the tornado shelter. So I got that displayed, and I put it in a little box the other day, and I have a postcard from the Olympic with it. I also have a menu that's in a different place.
That's incredible.
But I just like I found a real cool place for it, and it looks really neat. And I don't know. I mean, I still am drawn to those sorts of things in a way. Mm-hmm. So the obsession is not completely there, but it's not to the level where I would even think that there's something attached to me anymore driving it as there was back then.
Well, it's like, you did your part. You learned it. Whatever the intent was that this attachment wanted you to learn, you've learned. And so I'm the same way. Like, I'm not obsessed anymore, but if there's something on about Holocaust or, cause I love Titanic as well.
Yeah.
But, or Egypt, I'll watch them, you know, a lot of times they're reruns, but it's like, that's okay. So but do you think it could possibly be too on your talking about this potential of an attachment of that energy? Mm-hmm. Is it because it knows that we are, like you said, more sensitive than others? And maybe is that our first experience of something trying to wake us up to what's around us?
Yeah, I mean, I think it might have, you know, a double intent. I mean, I think anytime, you know, when you're trying to teach something to another person, you know, especially like being a parent, it's, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, they got it. It's fulfilling, you know. So, you know, if you're trying to convey your emotions or your story or your struggle or whatever you went through, and you're doing it in this fashion as a spirit on the other side, there must be, you know, if you're feeling emotion, some sort of satisfaction here going, this person, you know, you were heard, essentially. This person is feeling what you wanted them to feel. Not trying to hurt you, but just trying to have that connection with another person or another human, if you will, soul.
Well, they want the story told.
Yeah.
And told correctly, of course. I mean, I know, you know, you probably have the same things. I mean, I'm very good friends with the parents. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of Reiki for them, and I see a lot of stuff. I've never been to the farm.
Yeah.
But I've accidentally remote viewed the farm twice. I've seen a couple of the spirits there. I think that energetically we do glow a bit differently when we are sensitive to things, and mm-hmm. they're not bound by space and time. So they're certainly not bound to locations.
Yeah.
So I think there's some teeth in that.
Yeah. It's always, I mean, it's one of those things where you end up with more, more questions than answers.
More questions than answers. But that's the best. Those are the best topics, right?
Exactly. That's
because what would we do if we had the answers? We wouldn't have anything to do anymore.
You're exactly right. It would put all of us out of business.
I don't want to know all the answers. I'm having fun exploring it.
Yeah. You're exactly right. And it's so interesting as more and more people talk about this, the more and more ideas that seem to make more sense, there seems to be more direction, at least in some way, shape or form. You had mm-hmm. mentioned earlier about the lighthouse in St. Mm-hmm. Augustine, and you said you won't even set foot in there anymore. So, of course, that sparked my interest. So,
the jail, the old jail. Oh, the I love jail. The lighthouse. Okay. I'm at the lighthouse. Okay. I'm a member. I go there all the time.
Okay.
The old St. Augustine jail is a place I will not go in.
I did an episode on it years ago here on this show. With doing hundreds of interviews, I don't remember anything. So give me.
Well, it's not like you're not one of the most popular podcasters ever. Nobody would expect you to roll that. But the lighthouse, honestly though, the lighthouse is weird because I don't like the land. Okay. I love the lighthouse. I know the little keeper, he's always standing in the door when you're walking on your left. I've seen him twice. I've seen the little girls down in the base of the keeper's house. Those are fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about the land that I can't quite put my finger on that I don't like. Now, granted, we have a lot of Indian history here with Tibetan Indians.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what's underneath the ground there? Who knows what they've desecrated on top by putting it there? But there's just something not right about the land it sits on.
Yeah.
But the jail, the old St. Augustine jail, I had actually gone into probably 10 years ago. So well before I knew I was sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a tour. My parents were in town during the day. You couldn't pay me to go in there at night before I knew I was sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked in and we got into this isolation cell and I just lost it. Crying, overwhelming, sad, like didn't know what was going on, finished the tour. And I'm like, what the heck is that? You know, I didn't know anything about any of the sensitivities that I had.
Yeah.
So then of course I'm watching Kindred Spirits a couple of years ago and I watched Chip Coffee walk into the room I was standing in a decade before and he had the exact same reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it's just, there's so much sadness there. I mean, it's like putting a 100-pound rock on your chest. And I have an issue with some of the tourist attractions in St. Augustine, as with any big city, because they're really manipulating and making money off of a horrific environment and situations for these men.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with that. But that overwhelming sadness was so awful for me. I've just sworn I'd never go back.
Do you think that
Escapes was here in September? That's how I met the parents. And you could tour the lighthouse one night and you could do the jail. And I was like, I'm not doing the jail.
Yeah.
They're like, you're not going at all. And I'm like, absolutely not. Adam tried to drag me over there. I'm like, no, I'm not going.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll stand outside, but I have too much respect for the sadness that is held in that place.
Sure.
To go poke around with flashlights. I'm just not going to do it. I don't feel right about it.
No, I mean, it's an interesting, and I kind of struggle with some of that too. When the kind of the advent of all of the paranormal tourism was beginning, you know, roughly 10 years ago or so, where it was really kind of starting to open up. That's around the time when we started doing some of these shows. And the concept to me at first really felt off. I'm like, you're doing what? And charging people? I mean, I get, but then I've kind of come around to going, you know, a lot of these places wouldn't exist anymore. They were like on the verge of being torn down. And without doing this, it saved these places in many ways, shapes, and form. I have no issue with anyone charging to keep it, afloat and, you know, even make some money at it if, you know, you're putting your time and effort in it. Sure. I see nothing wrong with that. It's just when tragedy gets exploited, that's the part that I struggle with.
That's my issue as well.
Yeah. That can be a bit much. And there's weird energies in all sorts of places. A place where I would honestly say, I don't want to say exploited because it is an educational thing. And I'm sure it probably has turned many a children onto the topic, and we'll go back here to Titanic again. It is, like the Titanic Museum. So I lived in Branson for a while. And there's one there, and it's really kind of freaky when you're sitting at the Ruby Tuesday eating your salad from the endless salad bar, and you look out the window, and there's the bow of the Titanic in a snowstorm. Right. It's just kind of weird, but you go through it, and it really is. It's well done. The artifacts that they have in there were things that were salvaged from the water the days after. There's nothing in there that was picked up from the floor. And it's done fairly well. But I know that I used to know the curator of the museum or whatever the title is. And she would send me videos sometimes. There's one where their Christmas tree gets pulled down to the ground in the middle of the night. And there's nothing there. It's like, what the hell was that? But I had a personal experience there once with the energy. And I'd be interested to hear your take on this. There's a area in the museum where it simulates you walking out on the deck at night. And it's cold and it feels like it did that night as best you can in a museum in Branson, Missouri.
I'm from Georgia, so I can relate. Yeah, so, and I live in Florida. Yeah. We don't do cold well here. You have to really work at it to make it cold.
Exactly. So it's as simulated as can be. But when my daughter was like 2 or 3 years old, we were going through it, and we had not opened the door. She did not know it was cold. It honestly looked like a very peaceful setting out the windows that we were looking at, because it kind of puts you on the bridge and there's the wheel, and it looks like it's a starry night. And so there's nothing really scary about it. But she immediately, when we got to that part, she would not go through that door, and she wouldn't say why. She's like, no. And she just absolutely refused. I had to carry her through it, and we got out. And then she was fine, but it was just that area of the museum that she would not handle. Years later, and I found this very fascinating, and I don't really watch many ghost shows at all. And I think I've maybe seen two episodes of Ghost Adventures in my life. One of them was the Titanic episode, because I was curious. Mm-hmm. And in that episode, it's at that exact spot where they see little handprints coming onto the window. And that is the exact area. That's right where it was. It was that divider where she was having those experiences like 5 years prior to them doing their investigation. So it, because like, this kind of gives me a little validation that she wasn't crazy. I mean, not that I, yeah, not that I thought she was, but it was just, you know, it's like, oh, this is interesting. But a place like that, I mean, where it's not necessarily, there wasn't like real deck chairs out there. It wasn't a place where there's artifacts of the boat. It was more so kind of the, you know, science play area, if you will, of the museum where, you know, you could kind of interactively feel some things. With something like that, why, what would that be that's there? Is it the collective energy of the idea of what we're looking at that literally invites or brings something there? Is it something else off in the museum that's just, you know, what they're picking that spot to haunt? What do you make of things like that where there's a big focus on the tragedy and everybody has this energy going on? Is it really the spirits of the boat, or is it the energy of the people that are actually making the haunting?
I think it's probably a combination of all three. I mean, it's kind of what we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, power of suggestion. You have the tragedy itself. Is the facility that the museum in haunted already? Sure. So I think it could be a combination of all of them. And I wonder, from like the spirit standpoint, are they still coming to a place? Like, did they have a peaceful night out on the deck before they died? Or, you know, are they attached somehow? Because again, I don't think they're bound by space, time, and location. So, mm-hmm. I mean, who's to say they're not, maybe there's a couple from the ship that are just kind of checking it out. I don't know. I think that's the thing. That's where the magic lies, right? Cause we are never going to know the answer to that.
Sure.
We're all dead and gone. But I think it could be a combination of all of those things.
I mean, if I was dead and I could wander around and travel, you know, do whatever you wanted, that'd be great. Rent an RV or something when you're dead. That'd be kind of difficult. But if you're walking around and eventually you somehow in your death decide Branson's a good idea and you get there and you see, oh, my God, there's the damn Titanic. I died on that. Why is I'd be checking it out. I'd be walking around. I would probably hang out for a while, too, and mess with people.
Right.
Because it'd be fun. It would be it just makes you wonder, you know, what is that does that? What is your take on that with the energy? Because especially with Reiki and just the understanding of energy, of the idea that many times we are haunting ourselves. It's not the dead. It's not some residual.
Yeah.
It's just us and our nervousness and all of that.
Yeah.
That's just out there.
100% agree with that. That's the bulk of what I do. I mean, it's, people don't realize, somebody gave me a really killer analogy about, you know, a laundry basket, right? And your mm-hmm. little baby soul in this meat suit is hanging out of the butt, you know, you come out, the soul's in the bottom of the laundry basket, right? And then stuff starts happening in your life. You have a death or somebody makes fun of you or something. And so you start adding all these layers of clothes, for lack of a better phrase, of like traumas or weird things that happen, things that made you nervous or caused your anxiety. And then, you know, by the time you're an adult, that laundry hamper is like 30 stories tall. Mm-hmm. And you're buried under all this energy that's no longer serving you, but you didn't know you needed to release it in order to move on.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm wondering if it could be similar to the spirits as well. But I do. I think that we are, I was haunting myself. I'd be the first one to tell you that. I'm the one who caused my chronic condition. Mm-hmm. I made myself sick because I spent all of my adult life. I'm fine. It's fine. That marriage is fine. I'm over. I dealt with it. It's fine. Mm-hmm. I was not fine. Not even close. So I do think there is power in our own energy, but if we don't know how to use it the right way to channel it and remove the stuff that no longer serves us, we can absolutely haunt ourselves.
That's going to wrap up part two of our conversation with Aaron. If you like our show, thank you so much for supporting it and keeping us on the air. We could not do this without you. I'm glad you got to hear the second part of that interview. Now go check out all the other hundreds that you can binge away on here on our site. We greatly appreciate that support. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
With new McValue at McDonald's, you get more than you expect. So after a long day, buy a double cheeseburger and add a McChicken for a dollar. Because saving with deals is always on the menu with new McValue.
Prices and participation may vary. Valid for item of equal or lesser value.